Speaker McCarthy had listened to what Judicial Watch was saying, had listened to me, he'd still be Speaker, frankly, if he had drawn a line in the sand, at least on one thing, saying, well, you know, we're not going to fund the government absent a reform in this area. Pick one. And obviously the Republic is facing multiple threats. But even if he had picked one, I think he would have rallied Republicans to his side of all stripes and gotten through something positive. But instead, it was this utter collapse. And so the challenge for the next speaker is, in my view, that they should be pushing, again, for a line in the sand or highlighting what lines they don't think can be crossed in terms of future government funding fights. What are they willing to fight for? What are they willing to say, no, we won't proceed unless this happens? And specifically, again, as I highlighted in the statement that we showed earlier, we can't wait. They're trying to jail Trump now. The election interference is happening now. The censorship is happening now. The violations of your civil rights are happening now. Our military is being abused now. Unborn babies are being killed with tax dollars now. You name it, this Biden administration is abusing Americans six ways to Sunday. All as of Saturday with the full funding of Congress and support. And so now it's going to come up in 45 days, right? And they're going to decide, well, if they don't have all these various appropriation bills settled upon between the House and the Senate, and that's not going to happen. I'm just telling you now, I don't think it's going to happen. There's going to be another continuing resolution fight. And the question for the new speaker should be, before he is elected speaker, what are you going to do? Are you going to do what McCarthy did, which is rule out any possible government shutdown? And the government really never shuts down. Only portions of the government shut down. And of course, they can work it in a way that the shutdown only affects the worst of government, right? As opposed to the government necessities plus could still be funded. Or are they going to just do what McCarthy did, which is, you know, get Democrats with moderate Republicans, liberal Republicans, just to fund government, just keep on keeping on with this terrible situation we're in? We have a new House Speaker. I didn't think it was going to happen so soon, but Congressman Mike Johnson is now the new Speaker of the House of Representatives. I've known him for a few years. He's not been in Congress that long. Conservative guy, constitutionalist, God-fearing. That really drives the left crazy. I don't know if you saw his opening speech where he reminded everyone sitting in that chamber that they all are ordained by God in terms of their leadership, and whether they recognize it or not is another matter, or act accordingly. But certainly his prayerful reflection on his new position hopefully is a good indicator of where he'll proceed and where what next he'll do as it relates to the challenges facing him. And the challenges are significant. And those of you who've been following me on the weekly update here or on social media, and you've seen my colleague Chris Farrell raise these issues as well on his On Watch program, the issue is whether or not Congress is going to continue to fund the assault on our republic, right? Whether they're going to continue to fund the effort to try to jail Trump illicitly that is happening out of the Justice Department and also is happening out of New York and in Fulton County, Georgia. Whether they're going to continue to fund the censorship and the abuse of our military, you name it, the invasion, are they going to continue to fund that or not? And that's the test, that's the challenge, and it's something that Speaker Johnson's going to have to deal with. And this is my response initially to his selection, and I think I summarized it pretty directly. There it is, the U.S. Capitol. New leadership up there, Speaker Mike Johnson. Judicial Watch congratulates you, sir, but you got a lot of heavy lifting to do. You need to release those January 6 tapes as quickly as you can.
The McCarthy Congress has been hiding them from us. You got to release them now. You need to defund the Biden border invasion now. Our country's being destroyed. Frankly, you need to impeach him for the Biden border invasion. You need to defund the Biden scheme to rig the elections by trying to jail Trump and other innocent Americans. You need to do that now. You need to defund the Biden censorship of American citizens now. You need to defund the abuse of our military now. We can't wait till next year. Frankly, we can't wait till next week. The sooner you act, the better. God bless you, and God bless America.
Well, do you agree with me? I know I agree with me. The issue of the January 6th videotapes. The Speaker of the House previously, McCarthy, the McCarthy Congress, told a court recently that no American should have access to the tapes. They told the courts that Congress has sovereign immunity. The tapes are all security info. Even if we could get access to them, they shouldn't be released because they should be withheld as security info. Plus, there are a bunch of emails that the U.S. Capitol Police leadership have that they don't want to turn over as well. So Speaker Johnson should keep the commitment that McCarthy initially kept or promised, right, and release the tapes. Negotiate a settlement with Judicial Watch. Turn the tapes over to us. Let us win. So that's a big test. And then there's a test in a few weeks, which is the period in which this continuing resolution ends. And I want to go through it with you a little bit because it's worth highlighting, because they rely on you not knowing about the budget process in order, and they being the uniparty, the deep state, the establishment, what have you, that they rely on you not knowing about it so they can just slide through everything they want to slide through. And so the continuing resolution that McCarthy, in my view, wrongly signed on for, essentially fully funded everything that's been happening in Washington with no reform, no restrictions, right? And in theory, the way it's supposed to work, and the members of the House get together and they pass an appropriations bill by agency or two or three, depending on the bill. And these appropriations bills, 12 or 13 in total, they similarly get passed by the Senate with their priorities. And if there are policy differences that are funded under law through these appropriation bills, they're supposed to be hammered out with each other. Now, obviously, the House of Representatives, in theory, controlled by Republicans, would be passing appropriations bills that would hopefully do some of the things that conservatives want done in terms of defunding the Biden border invasion, defunding censorship, defunding the tax on Trump, et cetera. Now, of course, Democrats running the Senate, and frankly, a lot of Republicans don't want to do any of that. So if they can't agree, there's no money. And that goes back to this continuing resolution scheme that the left uses to fund their operations every year, which is our gargantuan spending bills called either continuing resolutions. You've heard omnibuses or minibuses. Some people kind of vulgarly call them crappy losses, but that's what happens. They just put everything off to the last minute and they don't give anybody any time. And since no one can agree on anything, they just agree to keep on spending what they spent the previous year with a little bit extra. So obviously that's not the conservative way to approach things. Certainly if you're looking for some reform and a reflection of the policies that the voters have who actually gave the Republicans the majority in the House. And from Judicial Watch's perspective, we want, and I think you want, some reform here, some anti-corruption statements through this continuing resolution process or this omnibus process or this appropriations process. So Speaker Johnson suggested that if there's going to be a continuing resolution again, because they're not going to have these appropriations bills done by the middle of next month. It's not going to happen. Certainly, even if the House has it, the Senate won't proceed because there's little political interest in doing it on the Senate. They're happy just to get what they got last year, plus a little bit more, the Democrats and Joe Biden. But Speaker Johnson suggested that if there is to be another continuing resolution to give people more time to do what, I'm not sure, but anyway, that there would be some restrictions put in place. Right? which was good, right? So maybe he's listening. Maybe he wants to do some reforms through this continuing resolution. And he's going to tell Democrats and encourage his colleagues in the House to tell the liberals and the leftists who are ruining the government that if you want the government to, quote, be funded, there are certain things that are going to have to happen. There's going to be a red line or two or three or four or five, but at least one. Who knows? Maybe they'll say, if you want more government funding or the government to keep on getting money, we're going to have to secure the border, and we're not going to fund our own destruction by giving the Biden administration money to move millions of illegal aliens into the country. Imagine if that was the line. Or imagine if the line was, you're not going to spend money to try to jail Trump. And to the degree your cutouts in Fulton County, Georgia, and up in New York City are relying on federal money in part to do their schemes against Trump, we're going to cut that off too. Imagine that. You're not going to censor Americans. Imagine that with federal tax dollars. So the question for Republicans is, and honest conservatives, are they going to do anything? Is there anything that they'd be willing to fight over? And if they if it doesn't work out the way they want, would they be willing to shut the government down over it? Is there anything they're willing to make a stand on? And if you want them to make a stand, you need to call your members of Congress, and you got to do it. I tell you, the only reason Speaker Johnson is Speaker Johnson was because of your activism and the activism of countless millions of Americans who flooded the phone lines on Capitol Hill. Now, is Speaker Johnson going to do everything I want him to do? Of course not. Is he going to do everything you want him to do? Of course not. I mean, that's just politics, right? But the fact is, there is a much more conservative speaker who shares a lot of our values for the first time in that key position, thanks in large measure to the activism of you, dear follower, dear viewer, dear Judicial Watch supporter. And if you want to follow up on that and leverage that success for more policy successes, certainly in the area of transparency, government accountability, et cetera, holding Biden accountable for his corruption. I'm going to get into that. Then call your members of Congress at 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. And congratulations, Speaker Johnson. I think he's a great guy. I wish him the best, but we got work to do, right? As I said in that clip. We got work to do. Our country is tottering. I run hot and cold. Is the Republic fallen or not? I don't know what you think. But either way, it's an emergency situation in what's happening here in Washington, D.C. with the abuses, the corruption in the White House, the invasion. And of course, we have all these national security issues that are made worse by Biden's personal corruption. So, welcome to the job, Mr. Speaker. Now you got to get to work. And there's, unfortunately for him, there's going to be no honeymoon. It's got to be immediate. I mean, the crisis is that significant. And if you share my views, maybe you don't share my views, but the least you should do is share your views with your members of Congress at 202-225-3121. And as I've discussed with you previously, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about some of the other work we're doing, you know, we'll keep on pushing in terms of the government accountability and transparency and ethics and such, whether it be getting information on the censorship, the invasion, the COVID scandal, which hasn't stopped, the Biden corruption. Judicial Watch will do our independent work. Election integrity, Judicial Watch will do our independent work. But Congress has got to get it together. Because everything that's terrible is happening with the help of Congress and the full funding of Congress. This week, there's been follow-up on Judicial Watch's disclosures last week that Barack Obama was present at the scene of the emergency response to the drowning death of his chef, Tafari Campbell. And in addition, it looks like he was present not only at the emergency scene, there was a witness interview that took place there. And then the next day at his house, it looks like he was present for another witness interview that took place there. I think it was the same witness. It could have been more than one witness. My question is, why was he hanging out for these witness interviews? Now, you may recall, the story was that Barack Obama was on another planet when that happened. He was nowhere near it. Well, it turns out he was there. And not only that, but he was present for witness interviews. And since then, we've had a follow-up from the Daily Mail, who's been separately and independently investigating this. And they've been getting some good information as well. And they were able to obtain this week, the audio of the 911 calls the Secret Service made, that Judicial Watch had uncovered, by the way, that the Secret Service made the 911 calls. They didn't tell us the Secret Service was involved. Judicial Watch forced that out. And let's play the audio of the Secret Service agent, it sounds like he's 12, God help him, calling 911 to report the tragic drowning.
911, the sign's recorded. Where is your emergency?
Let's turn it up.
We have a male drowning in the back of the property right now. We have our rescue swimmers. They're attempting to go out there right now.
What's your phone number that you called in on?
So that beeping you hear is redaction.
What's the best access?
I don't want personal information.
A swimmer and an agent driving down there right now to get on the boat. Someone came running up to our back post saying that a gentleman, it's just a guest of the house, is out there drowning. So right now, a rescue swimmer is going out there.
And you said you guys have boat access, so what do you guys need? Do you need an ambulance, or do you need water rescue as well?
They didn't advise right now. I would say at least an ambulance, and I don't know if they're what they're doing in the back of the property right now. I know they're getting, we have our rescue swimmer who's getting the boat right now. I would say at least an ambulance. I don't know what the
speed
time is.
All right, I'll send the ambulance over, and I'll contact the fire chief and see where he wants to go.
So the companion of the chef, whose name we don't know, is alerted the Secret Service, and that's why they're calling.
I don't know if you have, like, a better number for me to call you back if we get him out of the water, and I can give you another situation report. They're not passing anything over the radio
okay,
right
I think
now.
We have enough.
Yeah, I can give you that if you'd like.
So you can see that poor Secret Service agent was, you know, trying to manage the situation or help manage it as his colleagues were desperately searching the water for Mr. Campbell. So the woman who entered the water with Mr. Campbell, according to the documents we uncovered last week, they both were paddleboarding. Now, paddleboard is kind of like a super big surfboard, extra wide. You can stand on it and, you know, row while you're standing. That's typically what it's used for. She said they both tried to get up on their individual paddle board. She was able to stand up on it. He lost his balance, fell in, panicked, and drowned. She swam over to where he was, couldn't find him, and she got back to shore and, according to the report, told Secret Service, who obviously is on the property because it's Obama's property, and one thing led to the other with the Secret Service trying to mount a rescue, and then the local police brought some folks in as well, and the fire department. And the documents last week showed that Obama ended up coming down to the emergency scene because they set up a little emergency headquarters, and he comes down in his motorcade and is providing information and is there, and at least for the initial questioning of the woman who is with Mr. Campbell. Now, the woman supposedly is, according to the Daily Mail, a staffer also for Obama, but we don't know her name because they haven't released the name to us. But the documents show us also last week from the Massachusetts State Police that there was a Secret Service video that showed Mr. Campbell and this woman entering the water, and then the video also shows the emergency response in part by the Secret Service. And the trooper or the official who issued the report that we looked at said he watched the video and he described in what was in the video in his report that we were able or that we uncovered for the American people. At 6:54, this is what the video shows, two individuals identified as Campbell and blank, redacted, are observed walking on the boardwalk from the area of the residence towards the shoreline at Edgartown Great Pond. Both Campbell's and Blank's appearance and clothing are consistent with prior descriptions. Once near the shoreline, it appears that Campbell and Blank obtained paddle boards and paddles from a small alcove near the shoreline and subsequently entered the water. And then about 45 minutes later at 7:40, Secret Service agent Blank is observed running from his assigned post towards the shoreline utilizing his handheld radio. And then it shows other agents, according to the summary, also reacting, including the launch of a boat and the arrival of a police vehicle or police vehicles and Secret Service vehicles. And the officer or the reporter here, let me just see who wrote the report for us. Massachusetts State Trooper Dustin Shaw. So Trooper Shaw described what he saw in the video. But he also details, he didn't get the video. He looked at it, but he hasn't gotten the video yet. And what Judicial Watch did was we called and tried to figure out if they had gotten the video since this report was issued, and we couldn't get a response. Now, we also had already asked the Secret Service for any audio visuals as it related to the death incident, the drowning death of Mr. Campbell. Specifically, we asked for all audiovisual recordings, including dispatch calls, fixed camera footage, internal U.S. Secret Service communications and communications with all law enforcement and EMS personnel, emails, incident reports, witness statements, investigative reports, and other records related to the death of Tafari Campbell on July 23rd, 2024 in Edgartown Great Pond. So we sued, obviously, to get everything the Secret Service has on this, including why the heck they wouldn't tell anyone they were involved initially. Plus, we now know there's a video, so we want the video. So simple, right? And I don't understand why it's a state secret. As I said in our press release, what did I say in our press release? Why is the Secret Service hiding the video that can provide the public more information about the death of Barack Obama's personal chef? The Secret Service involvement in this death investigation has been treated like a state secret until Judicial Watch uncovered it. So, you know, they were pretending Obama wasn't around. They were hiding the fact the Secret Service was involved. And you know why? Because if Obama was around and the Secret Service was involved, people can get access to more information because there's a federal interest. So we sued. We asked for these records back in August. No, excuse me. When did we ask for them? Back in July. So they've given us the runaround. I mean, these records we got from the Massachusetts State Police, we didn't even have to sue for them. Secret Service, we almost always have to sue. And I just want to be clear here. The Secret Service is treated terribly by this group. I mean, they're just poorly run, in my view. I mean, the agents, as I said, they've been attacked a dozen times by Biden's dogs, more than a dozen times. Nothing was done until Judicial Watch stepped in and did the heavy lifting by exposing what was going on. They were forced to do that sham cocaine investigation in the White House and pretend not to figure out who did it. And then, you know, they tried to rescue that poor chef up in Edgartown, up in the Obama compound, and they didn't. And their bosses didn't want to tell anyone about it because there was probably something embarrassing about what the chef was doing or who he was with. I mean, that's my conclusion. I mean, why would you cover it up unless there was a political reason to do it? So even when they do something good here, the Secret Service is trying to save a man, and it looked like, you know, based on the reports, they were you know, I don't envy them, and I pray for them, because that's not fun. Trying to assert, you know, the trauma of someone drowning on your watch and trying to rescue them and dealing with the woman who witnessed it, it's terrible. And don't forget, the Secret Service is also being, they're also denying Secret Service protection for Robert Kennedy Jr., the Biden people are. Despite them knowing, based on Judicial Watch's uncovering and sleuthing and investigations and litigations, that the Secret Service knows that Kennedy's been targeted by people who are on their radar, known subjects. I mean, Kennedy just reported this week online that on Twitter, I did a tweet on it. What did he say? That there was one guy who was arrested, tried to jump his fence. The local police arrested him. They let him out, and he showed up again at his home, and he got arrested again. I think that's what happened. Still no Secret Service agents for him. So the Secret Service is, and plus the Secret Service looked like was brought in to help cover up Hunter's gun scandal. So this is a like bigger issue than just the chef, right? This is about the way the Secret Service is used and managed and abused by the folks who benefit from their willingness to put their lives on the line. Jeez. So I'll let you know if we get the video. Maybe the local police were able to get a copy of the video, and because they do say there are more materials they're going to give us, so maybe we can get it that way as well. But we have a federal lawsuit to figure out what went on here. Leave it to the Obama gang to turn an accidental drowning into a federal case because they just refused to be forthright about something. I know Iran has been behind this. I know Qatar has been a key funder of Hamas. I know the United States has sent money to the region in a way that almost surely benefited Hamas and the Palestinians on the other end there in the West Bank that are also a terrorist entity. What's interesting is the Biden administration has spent the last few years as part of this anti-Israel agenda appeasing Iran. And what's been particularly outrageous is they authorized, essentially they got out of the way and told the international banking community that $6 billion that the Iranians supposedly would be able to access or should in theory have had access to, they'd be allowed to have access to only for humanitarian purposes. So they get a $6 billion injection in the side of their arm, and they tell us it has nothing to do with their ability to fund terrorism and Hamas. And of course, any sensible person sees that even if you even if you pretend to limit it to humanitarian operations in Iran, that frees up money for other things. Or surely allows them to spend money in a way they don't have to worry about in terms of, you know, well, that's $6 billion we don't have to spend on humanitarian issues here in Iran. We can move that money around, or even if the money hasn't technically even been spent, you know, if you've got big money coming in, people spend the money already in anticipation. So outrageously, the Biden administration spent days, by the way, they made that money available as part of a ransom payment or scheme in exchange for the release of American hostages that Iran had taken. So they were basically ransoming these hostages by making all this money available to the Iranian regime for, quote, humanitarian purposes. And to be managed. Don't worry, they said the U.S. would manage how all that money was spent, and Qatar would manage it. And Qatar is a front and an ally of Iran and a supporter of Hamas as well. So they spent days trying to pretend what they did wasn't the reality of supporting Iran, the terrorist regime. And in fact, you had White House officials trying to get people censored for criticizing it. But even Democrats were upset with what was going on, and they ended up having to reverse course. So the Biden administration has essentially admitted that that $6 billion, actually would benefit the Iranian terrorist regime in a way that would harm our national security and potentially support terrorists after days of telling us otherwise. And if I were Congress, I would expand the impeachment inquiry to include Biden's lies about that money, his scheme to get these hostages out that included this ransom payment scheme for the Iranians, and hold him accountable there. And of course, we also have the problem of Qatar, who is a major funder of Hamas. And we at Judicial Watch have highlighted its enormous financial influence here in the United States. We were engaged in a multi-year legal battle on behalf of a client in Texas as a core legal institute, that's the name, and Texas A&M obviously was getting money from the Qatar Foundation, which is essentially the Qatari government. But we couldn't get details on that money. And we had to sue. The Qatar government came in through the foundation and intervened, and the litigation went on for years as we battled this foreign entity to get the truth about its funding for Texas A&M. And lo and behold, we found out why they were so nervous and didn't want the information to come out, because it turned out they gave Texas A&M around $500 million. So Qatar has an outsized influence, and if that's just the tip of the iceberg, I suspect, in terms of its influence operations here in the United States. Now, I know we have a base in Qatar, and there are different views about how useful they are. But there's no doubt they're a terrorist-supporting regime. There's just no doubt. And they're major funders of Hamas. The last time I saw, I think the number was $35 million a month in support they were sending over to the Hamas terrorists. So, you know, we not only have, you know, domestic supporters of terrorism, the leftist revolutionary terrorists that are Hamas. I mean, I know there's an Islamic flavor to it, but they're all creatures of the left. Don't let them fool you otherwise. So that's where we stand. I mean, I could go on and on about how terrible the terrorism was. And maybe I should go on and on, because already the media is trying to minimize it. I think even the Biden administration has been shocked about the viciousness and has been taken aback about what Hamas did. But nevertheless, the international community is rallying not behind Israel, but against Israel and its right to defend itself. Israel issues a warning to the population of Gaza to get out of town, and the UN says, well, you can't do that. Even the WHO, that corrupt entity, is coming in and attacking Israel. And in these circumstances, when you look at the language, it is a defense of Hamas and an effort to protect Hamas and ensure that it's able to continue to govern in Gaza. I mean, that's the effect of those who say that Israel already is engaging in war crimes as it seeks to defend itself against this unprecedented terrorist attack. I mean, the single greatest loss of Jewish life, it's been said, since the Holocaust, and a terrorist incident like that. And we have Americans who support that type of political violence. And we're seeing them out there today. Today is a day of rage. Hamas called on it. And their supporters are out in full force. They have supporters in the media, apologists in the media, supporters literally supporting them in Congress. When you hear people say, well, you know, both sides, we should pray for the innocents on both sides. Obviously, no one wants to see an innocent killed. But let's be clear. The reason any innocent is being killed is because of the terrorists. And they would imply Israel is at fault for the innocents being killed. And that's a smear, and it's designed, again, to minimize the terrorism of Hamas. and really to justify left-wing violence. Because I don't think there's any, there may be a tactical difference with Hamas, there's no strategic difference. I mean, these are allies. So I don't want to over, I don't want to, you know, belabor the point. But I've told you that our republic's under attack. And, you know, the same folks who lecture you about equity and indigenous peoples and that we need to reorganize our society and that we're interlopers here in America who've destroyed indigenous cultures, that's the same thinking that Hamas is promoting when it goes in engaging in genocidal attacks on Israelis. And I tell you, you know, we got to be aware, as Israel is an ally, obviously, of the United States. We have family ties because of the, you know, the interlocking communities here in the United States. I mean, think of all the Americans who have families in Israel. I mean, that alone, in addition to the strategic ties and the ties we have as an ally. But it shows you how important a secure border is. I mean, Israel, you know, to be clear, I hope there's some internal reckoning as to how that attack was allowed to occur. But it shows you the importance of a secure border. And Israel, obviously, that border with Gaza was relatively secure. But you can't have a secure enough border if you're trying to protect your citizens, right? And compare and contrast our border with, you know, frankly, any other national border in the world. It's a joke. Judicial Watch just had a Corruption Chronicles piece. I think they let in 2.1 million people, 2.2 million people at least. And of those, only 1% or so, less than 1%, maybe 0.3%. I forget what the number was. I think it was 99.7 have been allowed to stay. And we've highlighted how aliens of special interest, right? Special interest aliens, which are aliens that we have information to suggest are tied to terrorist entities. The numbers are increasing, there's no doubt. And those are the ones we're catching. So I hope it reminds us the importance of having a secure border. I mean, what struck me about the Israel situation is just how tenuous Israel's security is. Because I saw what happened last Saturday and thought, you know, that's how they lose their country. I mean, they have enough invaders from Gaza or from the north, Hezbollah, another Iranian-backed entity, or other enemies, you know, sweep into their land. Who knows how the country ends up? So these are, you know, Israel's nation's on the line here in terms of taking care of this issue. And the left, of course, doesn't want strength, opposes strength in the face of this revolutionary assault. So I just want you to see through it all. You know, don't be buy into the both sides do it, because both sides don't do it. And certainly in this situation, it's obviously what Israel is doing is clearly modest in what I would think is a modest effort at self-defense, even given the circumstances. I mean, they're to be commended for their restraint. So pray for Israel. Pray for peace, but pray for a just peace, not the fake peace that the left wants to impose. As far as the left is concerned, there's only peace when they win, right? But we can't let those revolutionaries win and destroy Israel. And because you can bet America is as much as on that agenda for destruction as Israel is. That's my view.
Joining us now, Tom Fitton of Judicial Watch. Good morning, Mr. Fitton. Good to talk with you, sir.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, Julie.
Let's start with this fraud trial in New York this week, which, again, I want to remind everybody, this is just the Attorney General Letitia James, who promised the only reason that she ran for office is to sue Donald Trump. So here she is. At least a Democrat is coming through with a campaign promise. But 80% of the charges are beyond the statute of limitations. How much time and money is wasted on this sort of thing just to get the bad orange man?
Yeah, this is a political trial. It's a show trial. Trump is a real estate developer who's being targeted by the New York Attorney General, not because there was, you know, complaints about what he did and banks were going up and lining up to the Attorney General's office and saying, we didn't get our loans paid. Everyone was paid. No one was victimized. Obviously, other than Trump, who's been victimized by a New York Attorney General's office, who, you know, as best as I can tell, used leaked tax return reforms interpreted by the media as a basis to target him with an unprecedented investigation that has resulted potentially in his business being destroyed. The ruling last week by the judge up there, you know, found, quote, fraud and could result in business licenses being taken. And I mean, that was his finding. I mean, we could have his property stolen. What a great way to freeze and interfere in an election by essentially walling off his key assets from being available to him as he goes into the campaign. What a nightmare politically and constitutionally.
Oh, you know, the judge also, you know, stated at the very end that the statute of limitations, like many of these charges, are outside of the statute of limitations. I mean, why in the world was this even allowed to go so far? I mean, I guess she's just rogue. She can do, Letitia James can do whatever she wants, but she didn't even have a case. And 80% of these charges or these claims.
Yeah, of course, the government's going to dispute that his words at the end would knock out the charges, as you suggested. But, you know, they're going back to his entire business career, it looks like, as far back as before 2014, which I think is the fight over the statute of limitations. But let's take a step back, Julie. Trump would not be in court if his last name was Smith.
Right.
Or any other real estate developer in New York City. This is an unprecedented targeting of Trump, and it's kind of part of this method by Democratic Party prosecutors and politicians. And, you know, I don't like to get too partisan here, but these are Democratic Party elected officials who are abusing the powers entrusted to them by the voters in their jurisdictions. In the case of the Justice Department, Biden's Justice Department, the entire American people, to try to jail, harass, and target someone they don't like politically. And, you know, I'm going to take a step back further. Why is Letitia James getting any money from the federal government under this McCarthy Congress? Mm. Why is Alvin Bragg up in New York, who's also trying to jail Trump? Willis down in Fulton County, Georgia, Jack Smith's Justice Department, they had all the money they needed last week over the weekend. With this continuing resolution, I don't see any serious effort to defund them.
The president's son, Hunter, will be in court today at 10 a.m. for his arraignment on these gun charges, which, I mean, they could have brought these charges over the last 5 years. They're just now doing it, and only because there was scrutiny over that plea deal that David Weiss attempted to arrange. He's pleading not guilty, Tom, which, again, it's like he's, on the face of it, there's no defense here. But, I mean, this sadly, as you know, it reinforces the idea in this country that there's two tiers of justice.
No, there's one tier of justice. Protect our enemies, protect our friends and target our enemies. That's the deep state's, that's the current Justice Department's approach. And in the case of Hunter Biden, he benefited from protection obstruction by the same U.S. attorney, now special counsel, who we're now supposed to believe can fairly administer the law here. And I'm not sympathetic, to be clear. I think Hunter should have been prosecuted a long time ago for a variety of issues. But you have to wonder, can you trust the Justice Department to treat him fairly now? Are they going to throw him under the bus?
Mm.
Now, if this is the beginning, and you know, this is the beginning of many other charges, the Washington Post is reporting they're planning to prosecute him finally in California over tax felony charges, not misdemeanors. And they get into the whole Biden financial schemes, the racketeering, not only involving Hunter, but other members of his family, namely Joe. Maybe it's good. But if this is the way to bury bury all of that and to move Hunter off the table, heck, I'd do more than plead not guilty if I was Hunter.
It's 6:43 now, and that we're all out of time, Tom Fitton. But it's always good to talk with you from Judicial Watch. Thanks for doing all the great work you do at judicialwatch.org. People need to swing over there and see all the good stuff they're doing. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and like our video down below.